Mrajuhtuden.
Mrajuhtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana, for joining me, I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Shannon Nelson. Shannon is originally from Fairbanks, Alaska. She is Gwich'in Athabaskan and Inupiaq. On today's show, Shannon courageously shares her story for those that are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Shannon Nelson. Hi Shannon, how are you?
I'm doing amazing. How are you?
I'm doing good. The way I found you was on Instagram, because I always find my people I interview on social media, because I figure if they're posting about sobriety and recovery, then they're a good candidate to come on and share their story. So I really appreciate you coming on to share your story.
Thank you.
Shannon, can you go ahead and introduce yourself and let people know who you are?
Yes, my name is Shannon Nelson. My maiden name is Shannon James. I am from Fairbanks, Alaska, and I currently reside in Anchorage, Alaska.
Okay, and are you Indigenous?
Yes, my family... My mother is from Fort Yukon, and she's Gwich'in Athabaskan, and my father is from Kotzebue. He's Inupiaq.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Can you go ahead and kind of tell your story, let everybody know how things were before you decided to get sober, and why you got sober, and how you're living your life now?
Yes. So... Before coming into recovery, I was in a very dark place. I was that kind of addict that couldn't get clean one day. It started about when I was 12 years old, and then I used all the way until I was 42. I noticed when the change came was when my mother told me that my stepfather's an amazing man from Tanana. My mom told me that he was not my dad and that I had another dad. So from there, I started, you know, all this resentment started coming out and abandonment issues. I started hurting people because I was so hurt. I fought my mom. I talked horrible to my father, you know, and that's where my addiction started, you know, and it started with alcohol. And then it progressed throughout the years with everything else, all the drugs. I've lost homes. I've lost kids. I've lost jobs. And most of all, I've lost myself, you know. The hardest part about having to heal was having to deal with myself. And today I work a 12-step program. And, you know, when I had the spiritual awakening, it was when my I I hurt my ex-husband and his significant other, and I was the type of addict that would always tell God, if you get me out of this one more time, I'll stop. But something was different about this last time. I truly made a pact with God, and I was for real that time. And this was in 2015, and I said, if you get me out of this, because I remember putting up the paraphernalia, and then something told me to put it up, and then there were the cops were there like at midnight to remand me. You know, having to take accountability, and I don't even know if you want to say accountability, because I made the pact with God. I told him, if you just get me out of this one last time, I will get it together. And he came through for me once again, always came through for me. Every time I put myself, you know, got myself into trouble, and I ended up pleading out to a lesser charge and not the charges that were given to me. So that's when my healing started, you know, and I left Fairbanks after that, because I was like, if I stay here, I'm going to continue doing the same things. And I just didn't see nothing for myself there anymore. I just, the people that I hung out with and, you know, my family, I just felt like I would never grow into the person that I was meant to be there. So I made the decision in 2016 to leave. And that's when the spiritual awakening truly happened, because I was scared. I was fearful. I didn't know where I was going to go. On my way to Anchorage, you know, I was crying. And God kept sending me signs, you know. I remember just feeling a sense of peace, like, don't turn back, keep going. So I kept going, and, you know, things didn't miraculously change when I left. It took a long time, you know. I put myself in treatment. I kept relapsing, and I noticed a pattern, like every 90 days I would use. And, you know, and this is like 30 years of addiction, you know, the bottom of bottoms. And I took it upon myself to go to Kotzebue, because I knew that 90 days was coming up. I got clean November 7th or 11/7/18. And then I knew that it was coming up to where in January, I knew that it was coming up that I was going to relapse. So I made the decision to leave Anchorage and go to Kotzebue, because that's where I got clean before in my past. I remember in 2012 when I fought to get my kids back. That's where I chose to go, and that was like healing for me. So I remember the tools. I've had the tools the whole time. I just didn't, you know, I didn't make use of them. So I went to Kotzebue, and when I went there, I had a job on before I even went there. I had an apartment before I even went there. So that to me was like my higher power, like still paving my way all the way. And when I went up there, I kept my paraphernalia for 11 months. I'll never forget, you know. Sorry, I'm getting a little emotional. I'll never forget sitting up there and then healing and being taught everything that my elders taught me about sitting with myself, turning to my higher power. And just meditation. I used to close my eyes and I used to imagine myself in the core of the earth. And I used to just imagine everything around me. And learning to balance a job, kids, you know, I couldn't really do much. I didn't have much energy. I used to check the mail. You know, I used to go to the sauna to meditate. And so I did that for 11 months. And that's when I decided to move back to Anchorage. And I knew I was ready. So I threw away my paraphernalia after 11 months. And I made the decision to come back. And once again, you know, my higher power led my path. I had an apartment when I got back to Anchorage. I had a job already set up, you know. And this is, I give all the glory to my higher power, because growing up, I was always told that I wouldn't amount to nothing. I would never have an office job because I have a lot of tattoos. I was told that I'd always be a dope fiend and a drug dealer. I actually turned all of that into motivation, and I was motivated to be something better than I was in the past. So I put myself in a medical office assistant school. And then from there, I went to drug and alcohol abuse school, and I landed a job at ANMC. That's where I knew I needed to get sober, because when I got a job at ANMC, I seen my people hurting, and I seen my people dying, and it didn't sit well with me. This was before I went to Kotzebue. That's what made my decision, actually. And so I knew that if I was going to continue to work in the medical field, I had to change my life, because I couldn't comfort my people knowing that I was hung over and still up from the same night. So moving fast forward, I went to Kotzebue, and then I came back to Anchorage. Now I work in the field, and the hardest part about this whole journey is just learning to live with myself. Today I'm big on self-care. I'm big on prayer, you know. I work a 12-step program. I have a sponsor. I do service work. I go to meetings. Everything that they ask you to do, I'm doing steps. I'm finishing up on my 10th step right now. So, but what I always tell the newcomers is life doesn't get better. It does get better, but you're still going to have obstacles. Before my 5 years, I almost went back out, and I had a really rough time because, you know, right now I'm in college. I'm actually working on my bachelor's in human services. Yes. Yeah. and it's a lot. And plus, I take 4 kids to school every morning and pick up 4 kids in the afternoon. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have a job to let me take my lunch at 3. You know, so having to balance school, work, kids, a 12-step program, it sounded easier just to run back out. But luckily, my eldest daughter was with me, and I just looked at her and I said, I'm not okay, and I want to run out that door right now. And she stayed with me all night, you know, and I had to rebuild my whole recovery network. Like, I got a new sponsor. I redid my steps. I changed my home groups. Like, I just like went from ground zero and rebuilt up, because that's how much my recovery means to me today. I chase my recovery like I chase my dope, and I'm very, very thankful that I get that life today, and I get to be in my kids' life, my grandkids' life, You know, I get to do all the things. I get to be present for people that are looking for recovery. So that is a big part of my story.
Yeah, wow. Listening to your story, such a powerful one. I have some, I can relate to some of the things that you said, like when you kept relapsing over and over. That's me too, you know, I kept relapsing and relapsing. And it wasn't until, like you said, it wasn't until I, you know, surrendered and actually worked on myself. Because, you know, I've been to treatments and whatnot, but it was either from the nudge from the judge, or it was to satisfy somebody else, you know, saying, them saying, you need to go to treatment, you know, and I'm like, oh, and I'm coming back from a bender and I say, okay, I will, you know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't doing it for myself until, you know, that last time. And, you know, I struggle with that too. I put it out there that I relapsed last year. And when you said you started over again, you didn't relapse, but I did. You started over again. I went to, you know, treatment again, outpatient treatment, because I just let everything that I learned go. I mean, one by one, it seemed like I put all my faith in doing this podcast and saying, oh yeah, I'm doing this, so it's gonna keep me, you know, going the right path. But I didn't, I wasn't doing, you know, the exercise, the meditation and stuff that I learned, the coping mechanisms I did. One by one, I started, you know, not doing those things, the things I used to do when I got out of treatment this last time, you know. And after I got out of treatment the last time, I was almost 4 years clean, you know, and that's the longest I've ever had in my whole life, because before then it was just a revolving door of relapse, you know, and then wanting to get clean and then relapse. So I want that life when I was, you know, working through everything, doing the things that I learned, you know, being in a good place, you know, I want that again. So I went back to, you know, outpatient. So that's another one that I related to you with.
It's really big that you admitted that, you know, you fell off. And I think that's big. A lot of people, they have so much guilt and shame to where they don't want to come back. And it's amazing that you came back and, you know, you said, I messed up and I want to try it again. Because a lot of people don't come back. There's a lot of people dying out there right now. And my ultimate goal is to help people that are struggling with addiction. And today I'm a case manager. And I just absolutely love my job and interacting with people that are looking for recovery.
Yeah, on your Instagram, you wear your sobriety recovery like a badge of honor, you know, in the open.
Uh-huh. And a lot of people feel comfortable in reaching out to me, and that's the way I want to be. I just want to be remembered as loving, caring, understanding, non-judgmental, you know. I want people to know that I'm always here if you need to talk. And I'm a vault. You could tell me whatever and it'll just go in this vault, and, you know, don't have to have any fear of talking to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you put yourself out there like that, you do open up the doors, and I applaud you for, you know, doing that in such open, because some people, they're sober, but they don't, you know, put it out there as much. Not saying it's, you have to put it out there. You know, people, everybody's different. Everybody's sobriety journey, recovery journey is different, you know, And what you're doing, you know, telling your story and living your recovery out in the open, you're showing people that, you know, it's okay. You don't have to be ashamed, you know, pull yourself up. And when you're ready, just reach out, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In January, I got tribal tattoos, you know, and I was like, because I have tattoos on my neck that I was getting rid of. I was lasering them off because I was like, oh, man. Like, I'm going places, you know, in my career, and I can't have these tattoos on my neck because there's such a stigmatism with neck tattoos. So, yeah. And then January, like, I got my 5 years in November. So January, I decided to get facial tattoos, and I'm like, man, on my face, how am I getting rid of these ones on my necks and putting them on my face? But I prayed about it, right? And all the signs were there for my higher power. Like, there was a moose walking towards me downtown, and an eagle flew over me like a little while later. And then when I was driving to go to the appointment, the lady that was gonna do my tattoos, there's a road with her name on there. And I'm like, okay. So my tattoos represent all the accomplishments that I've made in my recovery, and you know, my 5 years recovery was really big for me.
Wow, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Yeah, and having culture representing, you know, your culture like that, and tattoos are a way of healing too, you know. Some people you know, get like I have memorial tattoos of my mom and my dad, you know, and like you have those tattoos that you tie in with your 5 years, you know, and your culture. So tattooing, it's a way of healing as well, you know. When you decided to get sober, how difficult was it, and what were your steps?
So the difficult part was just living with myself. I've never lived with myself my whole life. I always had to have a man around, or, you know, friends around to help me, my family to help me. So a big part of me leaving Fairbanks and leaving that behind, I left it all behind. And coming to Anchorage and going to Kotzebue, I just learned to live with myself. That was the most hardest thing for me. Today, it's easier, you know. I'm a very independent woman, and I take my recovery really personal. You know, I'm very, I guess you could say, I don't want to say greedy, but I take it pretty personal to where I have boundaries and I don't let certain people around, because I used to want to help everybody, and I put myself in some pretty risky places helping people and letting them in my home. So I had to start making boundaries and cutting that off. But there's a lot of challenges still. I mean, I am on step 10, you know, and that's helped me a lot, because I didn't want to look at Shannon my whole life. I didn't want to look at all the wreckage that I've did and all the people that I've hurt. And I've caused trauma on a lot of people. Today I get to make amends and apologize and show them what I'm doing different today. I don't have to hurt anybody today. I get to just spread nothing but love.
You mentioned that you had to get your kids back.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know a lot of people listening, you know, go through that. And a lot of people, I don't know if you're comfortable talking about that.
I am.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
So I got my kids taken away in 2009, and it was because I went to sleep because I was up for so many days, and my kids walked out on the street. And when I woke up, OCS and the police were there, and you know, I had to take accountability that my kids could have got killed on the road. It took it at first I was in denial. Like, I didn't want to admit to any of that stuff. But after a while, like, it took me 4 treatment centers to even get my kids back. Like, the first couple ones, I wasn't serious. In one of the treatment centers, I was still using drugs. It was horrible. Like, and then once I got my Devonin, I left. So I did 2 short terms and 2 long terms. The 4th treatment center was in Kotzebue, the one that I mentioned in the beginning, and that was McCivic Wellness Camp. And that was 12 miles out of Selawik Village. And boy, that was some healing. Like, I haven't been the same since that. Like, today I keep my kids safe. You know, now I work in social services, mm-hmm. you know, in human services. Like, who would ever think, like, people think, like, me growing up, you know, I caught a felony at 18, and that was a failure to render assistance. I hit a cab when I was drinking and driving. So I thought I could never get a career. I thought I was always going to be a felon for the rest of my life and amount to nothing. And today, you know, I guess that felony, it got dropped to a misdemeanor because it says on my court view converted into a misdemeanor. So I was very fortunate about that because I was on felony probation for 11 and a half months because I could not get clean at all from 18, I think, to 29. Yeah, that was a long stretch. And even though I had the courts there, I just could not get clean. And when I got my kids, that didn't even straighten me up. Like, I ended up relapsing after I got my kids back. But there was a difference in me. Like, I kept striving to do better. Like, even though I relapsed, I'm like, I remembered where I came from, back to the lands, back to my culture, back to what the elders taught me. And today, you know, every day I just wake up and today I'm sober. Mm. Till the time I hit my pillow, I'm going to remain sober. And then I do it all over again.
Shannon, I want to thank you so, so much for agreeing to come on here. Hoyana.
Hoyana Deku. I really appreciate you.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project on 89.7 FM, KTDB, the voice of the Rema Navajo, serving Pine Hill, New Mexico. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Beulah!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.